Next hour, Dr. Martine Rothblatt joins us as we talk about Virtually Human, the promise and the peril of digital immortality. And when we come back with Sterling Allen, let's take your phone calls with him as we talk about cold fusion and other things on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Sterling Allen with us. We're going to take your phone calls as well. There is a dark side to this, Sterling, of course, the sinister side of those who do not want this to happen. How far will they push to make sure that that doesn't occur?
Well, you hear stories over the years of the push that they've done already, inventors they've killed, threatened, et cetera. That does happen. But again, I believe it comes back to us in what we're going to put up with, and what we're going to allow, and what we're going to deserve. And as long as we let them get away with that stuff, that's what we'll get. But if we stand up to that, stand up with courage and bravery, they don't get away with it anymore, and we win. And so that's really the call. And I was thinking during the break, kind of an action item that I'd like to suggest to your guests would be to call your local papers and news services and say, hey, you guys ought to cover this cold fusion thing. This is really exciting. And give them a couple links. There's a lot of places you could send them to give them a little primer to get going on it. Get some movement going on. Get some coverage on this. Get people thinking about it. Realize that there's hope, because the powers that be don't want you to know about this stuff, just like they don't want you to know there are cures for Ebola. Vitamin C, natural herbs, colloidal silver, you know, this will kick it. And, you know, and so it's not even an issue. Just like a common flu, it's like, okay, I got a flu, take this, and, you know, next. You know, let's get rid of the fear. So, you know, there's a metaphor there, I think. They're just having a heyday, scaring the pants off of us. They're all about fear. And we should be all about faith and hope and solutions, because there are solutions to all these things out there that they don't want us to know about, because they want to turn us into slaves.
All right, let's go and take some calls here for you, Sterling. Let's go to our wild card line in Loveland, Colorado. Sean is with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, Sean, go ahead.
Hey, George and Mr. Sterling. I just wanted to bring up the point. I grew up in Colorado Springs. Actually, I was born in the year of 1984. But anyways, so I'm familiar with Mr. Stan Myers, mm-hmm. and he was the gentleman that created the car that was supposedly producing over unity, like 1600%. He was using resonating frequencies and hydrolysis and square waves on an oscilloscope to produce this. But anyway, so he got on to the final stages of his development, and he produced a unit that was, he actually had like four or five Oxford scientists that were backing his claim. And he had the unit really well refined, and the, you know, was getting vehicles 100 miles to the gallon. He was still using gasoline, obviously, but he kind of had an unfortunate death where his lab was destroyed after his death. It was very curious. But I was wondering if you're familiar with that. And also, George,
yeah.
You were referencing the movie called The Saint at the beginning of the
program. Is that what it was? Okay.
Yeah, and yeah.
So, all right, thanks. Go ahead, Sterling.
Yeah, you know, what he's talking about, we call HHO, or hydroxy technology, and it's actually number four in our top five. Cold fusion, Bandu Rossi, is number five. So there are four technologies ahead of him, including the one that your guest was just, or the caller was just talking about. These are actually in the marketplace. There are probably around 100 companies worldwide producing, installing these things for cars to improve your mileage everywhere from 20 to 45 or more percent. So you get, you know, as much as half better mileage by installing one of these electrolysis systems on your car. And when these things are fully developed, I know somebody who's been able to run a car 100% on it. Ran really hot, burned up an engine, so it wasn't to the point where they could pull it out, obviously, but they did it. And so it's a really promising, interesting field, and we're just in the beginning stages of it. And you can actually use Brown's gas for health. You can bubble the Brown's gas through water and drink it, or even breathe Brown's gas, and it has health benefits people are curing cancer and all kinds of, you know, really cool things with it. And so we are just on the beginning, cutting as the early days of Kitty Hawk with these technologies. It's really exciting.
Sure is. Next up, we go to Justin in Boise, Idaho, west of the Rockies. Justin, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just really interested in this cold fusion. I don't know much about it, but I have done a lot of research as far as the solar energy, and I'm really interested with Elon Musk and kind of what he's doing with Solar City and his Tesla market. You mentioned, Sterling, that you're from Utah. There's just a company that went public called Vivint down there south of Salt Lake somewhere.
Uh-huh.
And what they're doing at the solar market as well. And I was under the impression that we're kind of heading that way as far as renewable energy and saving,
Well, we will. You're right, Justin. We will go solar too. I mean, that's not going to go away. There's going to be
the
number.
Go ahead, Sterling. So popular is because it's not going to be cheaper than polluting energy sources anytime soon. So the powers that be give it a wink because it's not going to threaten their power structure. It doesn't threaten the petrodollar, but these other technologies that are exotic that stay that way because they get called junk science by mainstream media. That's impossible. Don't go there. You know, tinfoil hat to make fun of it. Is these things are going to be cheaper than fossil fuels. They're going to make the petrodollar obsolete, and it's going to replace that with a new free energy-based currency. And so, you know, that's the future. Solar is going to be obsolete. The solar devices, it's not that they won't work anymore, but they're going to be too expensive compared to other things that are available. And so I feel sorry for the billionaires who have invested big money in these big solar farms and stuff, because those are going to be a bit of a boondoggle compared to what's available in just a few years.
Sterling, give us your definition of cold fusion to some people who just don't know what it is.
Okay, basically, fusion is the combining of two elements on the periodic chart. And so you start with hydrogen and nickel, for example, and you end up with copper, as an example. Fission is the other way, where you break a larger into two smaller elements on the periodic chart. Cold, meaning that you're doing it at relatively low temperatures compared to the sun, which is where fusion usually takes place, at very high, you know, 100 million degrees kind of thing. And so you're doing it at room temperature. I've actually done an experiment myself, what's called an HCAT, where you take Brown's gas and you run it through a car catalytic converter, and the palladium and nickel and other elements in the catalytic converter actually catalyze the Brown's gas, and you have a little cold fusion reaction going on from what we can tell because of the amount of heat. We get more heat out than the energy we put in. I've measured that. It's not a whole lot at room temperature. We're talking below room temperature in a water bath. We had anomalous heat. And so that's, you know, cold fusion, or it's some kind of an anomalous event. So that's basically what we're talking about. And again, cold fusion is not the leader of the pack of the technologies. Go to our listing at top5energy.com, and you'll see some other ones that are even more exciting than that.
What's more exciting than that?
Well, the ones we talked about last time on your show, the solar hydrogen trends down in California, they are 1,400 times over Unity on their hydrogen system from water, where they're using a symphony of 16 different processes at the same time, including cold fusion. That's one of 16. They're using electrolysis, sound, acoustics, vibrations. They've got 16 things going on. And so you have a 400-watt input producing 1,400 times that equivalent of hydrogen gas on the output, and the oxygen in the H2O is turning into hydrogen. It's being transmuted so that you have the six protons in the oxygen molecule that turn into six hydrogen atoms coming out, or hydrogen molecules, you know, the gas that comes out. And that's third-party tested three times by a very reputable, at least two reputable organizations that have gone in and tested that thing, measured qualitative and quantitative analysis, how much and what kind, And they were the ones that measured. This is 97% hydrogen coming out from water. That's crazy. You know, H2O, there should be a ratio of two hydrogens for every oxygen, and they're getting 97% hydrogen coming out of this thing.
But I'm convinced that you've got to factor in, though, big oil. They're not gonna take this without a fight.
No, but that fight can be answered by the people saying, we're not going to put up with this anymore. And if the people get involved and support this stuff, then the big oil loses. But as long as we're just being pansies and letting them walk all over us and letting us, you know, ruling us by fear like a bunch of bullies do, when we get out of fear, they lose their power.
All right, next up we go to, whose turn is this? East of the Rockies, we go to Patrick in Richmond, Virginia. Patrick, hi there.
Hey, George Sterling. I've been working on a similar concept for a number of years. What I'm creating is a fabric. It's a high-temperature fabric that uses sound waves combined with laser light and terahertz radio waves. And what happens is it creates a weak force transmutation, which is really what this broadly called cold fusion is. And it's like having a fabric that gets hot like your electric heater, about the same power density per unit area. And with this fabric, there's no cord. So you could wrap this around an icicle and use that as a rocket to go to Mars.
Huh. What do you think, Sterling?
Just making steam come out of the nozzle from ice.
Yeah. And we, you know, as you can imagine, people come to us all the time with, hey, I got this great idea, or I've got this prototype. And that's what we do, is we try and vet and, you know, is this for real? And we usually draw the line on working prototypes. We if somebody has a good idea, we send them to a forum over unity.com. Go check it out, you know, bounce it around the guys over there. If you got a working prototype, then come to us and we'll see what we can do to help give it exposure and help you get it to market.
It's an amazing field, Sterling, no matter how you look at it. It's exciting, isn't it?
It's the next big revolution, like I said. It's very exciting. And the powers that, and this is what really bothers me, is the alternative world is not paying enough attention to this. Free energy is about freedom. And when we finally get our acts together, this is really going to give us, it's going to empower people like, you know, it basically is a saving force of the destruction that this planet is facing.
We go now to Kenny in Woodland, California. Hi, Kenny. Take it away.
Hello, Sterling, and thank you, George.
Sure.
Sterling, you know, there's very little that I know that's free. Free energy, if I want to pedal on a bicycle, I might be able to light up a light bulb. But, you know, you mentioned a lot of different things, free energy, and then you know of European scientists doing cold fusion research. And then you mentioned one chemical, and I'm a scientist, 35 years coming out of the University of California. You mentioned nickel, and that's all I heard. What chemicals are involved in this European cold fusion that you're touting, and then what peer-reviewed journals are they in? That's the first question.
Hydrogen, nickel, lithium, and iron are the primary metals. We've got a story that answers that question that we just posted 10 minutes before I came on tonight.
Outplay? What is the production? Are they doing?
There's a 54-page report from these college professors and PhDs where they went through all of their protocol and the data. And they show the isotopes, the percentages before and after, how they measured it. They used five different methodologies in collecting that data. Very rigorous, very impressive. You're going to want to read that. We have that linked up in our stories.
We've got time for a few more calls before the break, and we'll come back with final calls with Sterling Allen. Sterling, the unit for the house, would it be inside or outside the house?
It's going to depend on which genre it is. A solid-state system you could stick in your mechanical room, no problem. Something that's spinning and making a little noise like a noise refrigerator you're going to want to have in your garage so it's not disturbing you in the house. Something that's maybe using, you could use one of these HHO systems, for example, to run a gen set, and you could obviously want to run that outside. You could use a lot less fuel than you would otherwise. We have a guy that's using syngas or biogas, using wood to gasify the wood and to run it through a propane generator. They're going to be doing a class in a couple of weeks that people can sign up for. It's about $700. We'll be announcing that in our news here probably end of this week, where they're basically running a propane, off-the-shelf propane generator that can power a house, and it's so clean that you can run this indoors and all the heat goes to heating the structure, or you could have it outdoors during the summer when you don't want to heat indoors to heat water or other things. And the waste product is biochar, which is you can use brushing your teeth, you can use it for replenishing soil, you can use it for all kinds of things, medicinal stuff. It's really an amazing
thing. A lot of applications there. Ray is in McMinnville, Tennessee. Ray, you're up with us. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I was just curious. You know, we've had a weight and pendulum system for, like, grandfather clocks for well over 100 years. Why cannot we use that to turn a turbine?
That's an interesting question. Old-fashioned, Sterling, but it would work, wouldn't it?
Well, the problem with the pendulum like that is you have to put energy in. The pendulum will keep swinging. You have to have a little weight to overcome the frictional losses. And so to try and harness that for energy doesn't really make sense because there's no input, so to speak. These other free energy devices that we're talking about have an input. Solar is free. You don't have to pay for the sun. You don't have to pay for the wind. You don't have to pay for geothermal. It's there free for the taking. You just plug into it, and it's yours. But those have limitations because the sun doesn't always shine. You have clouds, etc. Whereas these other modalities are more rigorous, more hardy because they're 24/7. You could, go to Mars, and it's just as powerful there as it is here. Some of these modalities, not all of them. So there's a lot more versatility with these. And it's when I say free energy, I mean that it's free, as in you don't have to pay for it. Nature gives it as a gift. Hydropower is free. You know, the sun evaporates the water, makes rain, and you collect that in a dam, and you run a turbine. That's free energy. You don't have to pay for that process, but obviously the dam costs money, the turbines cost money, and there's an installation cost. So obviously all these free energy devices are going to cost money, and what we're looking for are things that are going to be as cheap as possible and cheaper than these polluting fossil fuel systems. And that's what's so exciting about most of these exotics, is they are going to be not only clean, but affordable, and eminently so.
We're going to come back and take some final phone calls with Sterling Allen as we talk about cold fusion right here on Coast to Coast AM. And as you know, we have a television program. We tape four of those a month, and they're fun. I really like it. They're incredible programs, and they're produced by executive producer Tom Danheiser on Beyond Belief. You have a great time doing that, Tom.
Yeah, they're a lot of fun to put together, and we all kind of get together and just, the guests, I want to talk a minute about the guests, because the guests get very excited. I just make one call, and I ask them, would they like to be on the show? And they're like, yes, yes. And we always get thank yous, and, we add little bells and whistles, and your interviews are great, and just a lot of fun.
They're 30-minute shows, and they move like crazy, don't they?
They go real quick, yes.
Super. All right, thanks, Tom. So Beyond Belief, if you want to watch it, you can watch it free for 10 days by going to this website, www.beyondbelief.com. Just remember that, beyondbelief.com. Sterling, so I believe you will continue the fight to try to get this known, to try to get this done, won't you? You're not going to give up.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing that's really fun is the guy who is the president of our New Energy Systems Trust, Mike Waters, actually came up with a wind turbine design about 10 years ago that he just didn't pursue because it's really obvious, but he's more enticed by his more exotic stuff. But he broached it to us about a year ago, and we've been saying, hey, you know, we just should start with something that is bite-sized for people and help, you know, prime the pump financially. And we're actually in the process of rolling this thing out. This design, I can't tell you, he doesn't want me to disclose yet. Publicly, they're in process of finding patents and, you know, all that
stuff. Sure, I understand.
And they do have a U.S. patent filed. But this thing is 20 times at a minimum more effective and efficient than those three blade turbines that you see out all the time. 20 times. If you get 5% in the wind industry, they're going to knock on your door and say, hey, you know, let's talk. He's 20 times more efficient. And it's totally a no-brainer. It's easy to explain, easy to understand, and there are people standing in line to get involved in this. And so this is exciting because this could help, you know, rolling this thing out. We were going to go to China this month, actually, to, you know, talk business with some people over there, but they don't have the patent coverage yet, so we postponed that trip. But this is exciting. The reason I bring it up is because it illustrates the genius of the people who are outside the box. This is just like a no-brainer, easy stuff to totally dance in circles around anything out there in the mainstream, and it takes backseat to the really cool stuff that we're playing with. So if something is 20 times better than what's in the wind industry right now is like ho-hum to us, imagine how cool the stuff is that we're playing with.
Let's go to Michelle now in Garberville, California. Welcome to the program, Michelle. You're on the air with us. I think.
Hello?
You're not Michelle.
This is Michael.
Well, Michael, you hold on because I may have hit the wrong button. There's Michelle. Hey, Michelle, go ahead.
Hello, am I here?
Michelle and Michael, I'm so confused, but go ahead.
That's all right. I'm enjoying your program.
Thank you.
Since 1989, my husband and I have had free electricity from our solar panels, so I absolutely disagree with you that solar is on the way out. In the summertime, I have to unplug half of my solar panels. I have so much electricity, and there is no grid for me to sell it to because we are totally without electricity on this part of the hill. So I haven't spent anything but for batteries. I don't have any problem at all. Not only that, but once you understand the principles and basics, you set it up yourself. My husband and I are not geniuses. I've had a little college. He had a high school education, and we set it all up ourselves, totally solar. We have an inverter, and I'm sure that the inverter will go sometime, but it's been 25 years, and we've never paid for electricity.
Oh, that's amazing. Amazing. Don't get caught.
It's not that hard.
I was actually raised with that. My dad's got a solar home, 10 different solar principles incorporated into it. I was raised with that, and we're leapfrogging, taking that and building, you know, going beyond that. So I take my hat off to you. I'm grateful for people like you who have helped pave the way. But I go back to what I'm saying. Solar will become obsolete. It'll be a lot cheaper for these other things and a lot more practical because they're not going to be limited by, you know, some of the limitations you have with solar and wind.
Okay, now let's go to Michael in Reno, Nevada. Here you go, Michael. There you go.
Hello, George.
Hi, Michael.
Hi. Hello, Sterling.
Michael?
I wanted to ask, you know, I always think about, like, I know solar's on its way out, but you know how we have those calculators where the energy of the sun helps you to be able to work a calculator?
Mm-hmm.
Will they ever come out with something like a laptop or you know, the iPhones and stuff that'll work like that?
Yeah, one of the technologies that got logjammed would basically be like the size of a business card that would power your laptop. You'd never have to plug it in. Something the size of a postage stamp would keep your phone running continuously, would outlast your phone. And that's using an electric principle. It's like dancers on the floor of a dance hall except that the answers are electrons. And I'm not sure exactly how that works, but it was had three or four third-party tests done on it, signed off, worked really well, long-duration tests, et cetera. But they made some bad decisions in who they invested with, and the guy threw him out on the street. And, you know, it's one of those things where crazy things got in the way of something which, for all intents and purposes, should be here and now. And yet, I would argue that the angels are getting in the way, not the men in black, because we don't deserve this yet.
No, we don't. But the men in black are watching everything, aren't they?
They are, but I'm not afraid of them.
Let's go to Jamie in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, east of the Rockies. Hi, Jamie. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Good, Jamie. Thanks for calling.
I'm honored to speak with you. And I've been listening to the show clear back when Art Bell was on
there. Way back. Thank you. Thanks for sticking with us.
I never felt compelled to call, but I did hear Sterling make the comment that computerization has been an equal for jobs. For what it's lost, it's added. And I worked for a grain processor, and before we had computerization, I could see as soon as we entered with the computerization that it really helped with inventory, but then it kind of morphed to a part to where the economy had got tough in the early 80s. And we had people that were supervisors at crane places that had got jobs had moved over to China. Supervisors that had worked at meat packer plants that had went to bringing in a bunch of aliens in. And so the prices had went down and those people lost their jobs. And so we were very lucky. We ended up with a whole bunch of very talented people when they added the fourth shift. And so at first, it was great because it really helped us with the inventory and helped us manage that.
But then...
But what happens with computerization is that if George Norrie can do his job with 19 people, where the last program took 38, they had statistical analysis of every move you made recorded on the computer, and they found you could run this product and run it this way, and it was the most efficient.
And run it at a certain place, too. Maybe you go to Mexico with it.
Yeah, but if you go with the abundance...
It wouldn't be beneficial to move it to Mexico because then you'd have the transportation costs not only for the raw material, but you'd also have it going out.
Yeah.
So that's not true at all. And the bottom line was then they recorded how, for an example, if George Norrie was more efficient with how he conducted himself, that was recorded. So they used that against us because all of a sudden they didn't need to pay wages or retirement or anything for to retain good people that could keep the place going, which they couldn't do on themselves.
Well, there's no question, Jamie, that and Sterling, that the computer industry in the affected a lot of jobs, while it created jobs too. And he's in an industry that got hit bad. I guess that happens.
Yeah, I mean, that's why they call these disruptive technologies, because they're going to create a shift. People who are in a comfort zone are going to have to move somewhere else. And I would argue that shift overall, as we choose freedom again and goodness over tyranny and slavery, that we are going to be extremely productive, and we're going to be able to get a lot more done. We're going to spend a lot less time just barely surviving and doing things that we're really good at and that we love. We're much more effective and efficient when we do that. And so not only will we be more productive, but we'll be happier, and we'll be have more time for leisure and talking to friends and painting and, you know, doing things that are enjoyable to us than just barely making a living. So that is the world that we're going to. When you drop the price of energy, food prices go down, commodities go down. And this doesn't give us a license to rape the planet and to tear things up, because that's one of the reasons these things may be held back from us, is because that's what we would do with it right now if it came out today. And so a little more maturation on our part, a little more humility and a little more goodness on our part, and the angels will say, okay, we're ready to, you know, they're ready now. But I don't know that we're there yet, except maybe some exceptional cases, like we said, intentional communities, preparedness-minded people, people off-grid and whatnot.
All right, back to the phones we go. Reed is in Pennsylvania, first-time caller. Reed, you are on with Sterling Allen.
Hey, I got this perfect person to ask this question of. It's just a little off-topic, but I was on the Internet the other day and looking on YouTube, and I ran into a demonstration of a energy where a guy took a little computer fan and added some magnets to the blades and held a magnet outside the blades, and it basically ran independent of any other electricity. And he has
Hold on, Sterling. Let him finish before you step on him.
But then I was just curious if that was a hoax or if that's a technology that really exists.
That one is a hoax. They've got a Reed switch in there and a hidden battery, and the Reed switch turns the battery, connects it so it turns the fan on. So as you approach it with the magnet, it turns the Reed switch on and it starts spinning.
Now, they say that Edward Leed Skolnin, who was down at Homestead, Florida, down at Coral Castle, that he had a magnetized revolving system that he may have used to move the blocks and rendered them, weightless. What do you think of that?
I went and visited Coral Castle a couple of years ago, and the tour guide actually made a very strong case that most of what he did was using conventional stuff that he got, I think, from Serbia he migrated from, where they used that as a traditional way of moving things. It was basically a methodology using cranes and pulleys and whatnot. It took a long time, but one person could do it by themselves. He may have had some stuff going on. He may have had some anti-gravity stuff, because he certainly, there's a holder technology called the permanent or the perpetual magnet holder that he came up with that we've had some people replicate that is really fascinating. You take a couple of flat sheets of metal, stainless steel, for example, and you have a little line through it, and you run a wire through it, you hit it with a voltage, and those pieces of metal will stick together like they're magnets, but they're not magnetized. And then you hit it with the opposite current, and they come apart. So you could use this for locks. You could use it for, cranes lifting things, and then like it's an electromagnet type of thing. So some pretty cool things that he came up with that the modern science does not acknowledge. So it's a mixed bag.
All right, let's go to Steve in Angels Camp, California now. Steve, we got some time for you. Go ahead.
Yeah, hello there, George. Hello, Sterling. Nice
Hi.
To talk to you.
You too.
I won't play devil's advocate. We're short on time, but I'll have to look at your website. But if somebody wanted to hands-on prove that any of these things work himself, is there any targeted technology that you think is easiest for somebody to do in their shop?
We have been begging for something like that for years, something that you could, download a set of plans and build something, put it together from off-the-shelf components that would be easy and affordable, that has reasonable power output. And there are quite a few things on our open source page that are interesting, but nothing that's really exciting in terms of useful. But talking about open source or replication, the Andrea Rossi technology, actually, they inadvertently gave a lot of information away in this report. They meant to publish a 15-page redacted, watered-down version for the public, and apparently there was a miscommunication, and they ended up publishing the whole 54-page document that included some little secrets in there. So we may see some people racing, like the starting gun has been fired, and we may see some companies seeing who can be first to replicate and then to take the market, hopefully with the agreement of Andrew Rossi and his company, Industrial Heat.
We've got time for a couple more calls, maybe one, at least one. Lewis in Ontario. Let's get you in here, Lewis. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks, George.
Sure.
I just had a couple comments. Saw something on the internet there with solar roadways. And another thing I was looking at was the VOT, the vertical axis wind turbine.
What is that?
It's a wind turbine that is on a vertical axis.
What's it do?
It has multiple blades. And
rather than spinning like the one you see with the three blades, you turn the axis so that the axis is on the ground and it the wind hits it horizontally rather than vertically or the other way around. But first, on the solar roadways, it sounds really cool, looks really cool, but that thing would be so expensive and difficult to implement. I don't see that as being a feasible technology, but I applaud people like that who are thinking outside the box. But that particular application I don't see as being feasible. The vertical axis wind turbine is totally superseded by Mike Waters' turbine. It would be many times more efficient than that one as well. And it would also work for water, for like tidal types of applications.
If you're a betting man, Sterling, is this going to happen? Cold fusion?
It already is. It's here. There has been replicated so many times, 17,000 replications of the effect since 25 years ago.
When do we see the battle between those who don't want it and those who do?
It's been going on the whole time. They're the ones that poo-pooed it from the beginning, said it's junk science. And people who are cowards go with that and put the tail between the legs and go the other way. People who are courageous and don't let fear rule them step up to the plate and make a difference.
Can it attract big money for venture money?
Yeah. This industrial heat, Andrew Ross's company, actually was funded by a Cherokee fund, and they're a $2 billion fund. And they signed up to get involved with that about a year ago.
All right, my friend, be well. Sterling Allen talking about cold fusion. Up next, Virtually Human, the promise and peril of digital immortality. That'll be next on Coast to Coast AM.